audiobook from nearly 70 years back, Excursions to the Spirit World. A report of personal experiences during conscious astral projection by Frederick C. Sculthorpe. With an introduction and a short survey of the subject by Dr. Carl E. Muller, Dr. S.C. Tech. ETH President of the International Spiritualist Federation. Originally published by the Greater World Association, London. Introduction. Accounts of visits to the spirit world, such as are published in this book, are certainly most interesting, the more so because many people might think such visits to be impossible. It is not the first time, however, that a living person has reported such an experience, at least as an exceptional occurrence. A classic example is Plato's story of a soldier, who after having been unconscious for several days, claimed to have been in the beyond and related all that he had observed. Similar happenings have also been reported in more recent times, but their exceptional character marked them as curiosities rather than as reliable facts and a source of knowledge. Since the advent of modern spiritualism, however, leading to psychic science and now to parapsychology, many strange experiences, such as apparitions, telepathy, clairvoyance, premonitions, etc., have been established beyond doubt. Investigations of modern times have also shown that the human personality is a rather mysterious being and more complicated in its psychic structure than is usually assumed. Thus many occurrences, formerly regarded as mere superstition, must now be accepted not only as possible but as proven facts, although it must be admitted that psychic science is still in its infancy. What is referred to, in a general way, as astral projection may be classified into different stages or degrees. In a typical exteriorization, the person has a feeling of becoming separated from the physical body, perhaps even seeing that body lying in bed, having a strange sensation of overwhelming freedom and increased mental powers, sometimes being able to walk through walls into adjoining rooms or apartments. When such an experience is extended to walking in the street or flying to distant localities, we have an excursion which is often called traveling clairvoyance in scientific publications, because the person is then able to perceive what happens in that distant place. The term traveling clairvoyance does not seem to be recommendable because there is also a clairvoyance into the distance, quite different for the clairvoyant person experiencing it, and these two should be clearly distinguished. The excursion may not be confined to earthly surroundings, but may extend to the spirit world or astral world, thus becoming an astral travel or astral projection in the proper sense of the term. Sometimes this term is understood to mean a projection in the astral body or spirit body of man, which would justify its use for the whole group of such experiences. The whole field of exteriorization and astral projection covers a vast variety of observations which are not only of a subjective nature, but sometimes are connected with physical changes at the distant place. The spirit body of projected persons has been observed by other persons, which proves the phenomenon to be real, in the usual meaning of the word, and not merely a subjective experience. Further, it will be seen from the examples related in this book that the projected person cannot always remember the whole experience from start to finish. Also, apart from memory, there seem to exist various types of consciousness, perhaps connected with different memory states. For a simplified explanation, man may be regarded as consisting of two parts, a material or physical part and a spiritual or immaterial part, normally interpenetrating each other. At death, the two parts separate permanently, the material part to decay, the spiritual part to survive consciously, living then in the spirit world. On this basis, astral projection or exteriorization may be explained as a temporary separation of the spiritual part from the physical body, this temporary separation being of a special kind because the subject remembers in the normal waking consciousness all or part of the experience gone through during the projection. Exteriorization connected with travels to earthly places some distance away, both spontaneously and experimentally, have often been reported and may be regarded as proved to be a reality. Excursions to the spirit world are more difficult to corroborate, but this book gives examples of confirmation. In addition, if a person has had repeated experiences of projection and of clairvoyance, thus learning to distinguish and to know what an excursion feels like, we may trust him to know also the difference between a projection to earthly surroundings and one to the spirit world. We may thus accept such reports as reasonable testimony and subject them to a comparative study in order to see how far they agree with each other. A difficulty arises in so far as spiritual experience may be either of a symbolical nature, similar to dreams of the same kind, or else be due to a spiritual reality. The symbolical experience is quite personal and individual, also it may be much influenced by preconceived opinions. From this point of view, accounts from saintly persons of old or from mesmerized subjects suffer from being colored by their own religious and dogmatic convictions. Even Swedenborg, an outstanding scientist and impressive personality, was mainly concerned with religious implications, and for that reason his descriptions must be studied with caution. Some of his statements are corroborated by modern observation, but in many instances their symbolical character is obvious. That is why modern reports by people with inquisitive minds, not bound to any dogmatic ideas of any church and interested in psychic science, are more reliable from the start. In any case, all teachings received from the spirit world depend not only on the person receiving and reporting them, but naturally also upon the character of the spirit teacher. Psychic science comprises two main sections, animism and spiritism. The former involving anima, the soul of the living man, the latter comprising facts where the action of spirits is indicated. All serious and independent investigators who have carefully studied, not only one particular kind of phenomena but the whole field, know that man has a spiritual part which survives bodily death. Both survival after death and communication with the so-called dead must be accepted today as well-established facts. By spiritualist methods it is possible to receive descriptions of the spirit world from the spirits themselves. There are many books dealing with this question. A comparative study of this material shows that the spirit world consists of a number of widely differing states or spheres. However, it is most important to obtain additional information by means of astral projection, because it is an independent source of knowledge belonging to animism, though rather close to the borderline between animism and spiritism. In view of these considerations, the experiences described in this book are of unusual importance to psychic science and to anybody interested in the subject. The projectionist in this case, Mr. Frederick C. Sculthorpe, started his investigation with an unbiased mind, in a spirit of healthy inquisitiveness and unrestrained curiosity, wanting to find out the truth for himself. My contact with Mr. Sculthorpe resulted from our common interest in astral projections. On his side, out of his wish to exchange ideas with other students of the subject, on my side more the collecting of experiences on account of their theoretical importance. When our correspondence started in September 1956, I soon satisfied myself that his experiences were not only genuine astral projections, but also that he was a good observer and a sincere narrator, capable of giving a truthful and sober account of his visits to the astral or spirit world. I have not experienced conscious astral projection myself, if I accept some curious incidents to be mentioned later. Thus, in our mutual exchange of ideas and observations by correspondence, my contributions had to rest upon what I had learned from books and also on the facts I had collected from several acquaintances who have had projections for some years, either visiting earthly localities or having contact with the spirit world. Since the year 1957, I have had the pleasure of meeting Mr. Sculthorpe several times, and I am glad to confirm the impression gained through our correspondence, that he is devoid of fantastical ideas, a man with both feet on the ground and very matter of fact. I feel almost proud to have persuaded him to write down his experiences, which in many ways are certainly unique, for publication. He finally consented on the condition that I would contribute a general survey on the subject, which is now included as an appendix. What Mr. Sculthorpe has learned by his many visits to various spheres in the beyond made him a happy man in a quiet and unassuming way, and in his modesty he would never have thought of presenting his experiences to the public. On the contrary, he was afraid he might eventually shock the feelings of many who cherish certain ideas about the next world and might not find them all confirmed by his report. However, the enormous variety of conditions in the various spheres has to be considered, and these reflect all kinds of human thought and all stages of development. In any case, his report represents a most valuable addition to our knowledge of the spirit world as gained by means of conscious astral projection. Dr. Carl E. Muller. Zurich, July 1961. Chapter 1: Embarking on a Strange Adventure. How it started. Before telling of my conscious astral projections, which I have experienced for more than 20 years, it will be necessary to describe how this curious faculty of mine started and how it came into full sway. An exposition of this background will be of interest to skeptics and believers alike and truly of help to many. An exteriorization is not such a rare occurrence as one might presume, but anybody experiencing it without previous knowledge will be alarmed, and often quite unnecessarily, be afraid of becoming mentally deranged. Thus more knowledge is necessary and should be disseminated. Perhaps the circumstances in my case were especially helpful, or I had a talent without knowing it. I cannot offer any elucidation in this respect. Previous to my wife's passing in 1934, I was as ignorant as the majority of people concerning life after death or spirit, and the whole idea seemed to me to be fantastic. The loss of my wife was a great blow to me, as we had been living in happiness. We had two children and I had a shop to attend to. But I was fortunate in living on my shop premises and, as my aunt came to live with me, the children were well cared for. I tried to keep my interest in the vast material obtainable on loan from the local library, where for some years I had obtained food for thought. One of my favorite writers was Sir Oliver Lodge, the scientist and the president of the British Association, and I was interested in his accounts of experiments in the field of electricity and electromagnetic waves. In the library one day I happened to notice a book by him, the title of which was Why I Believe in Personal Immortality. I was surprised that Sir Oliver had written a book on this subject, as in his scientific experiments he was very thorough and would test a thing in many different ways and would not be satisfied until all his findings agreed. I was curious to see how he would test immortality, and on reading the book I found that the scientific lodge had, as usual, carefully collected evidence over a considerable period and also devised certain unusual tests. The results of these seemed to him conclusive and the case for immortality proved. The proof came through those strange, as they then seemed to me, people called mediums who possess a finely tuned sense that enabled them to see and describe the spirits of people who had passed from this life, or who in other ways serve as a link to the spirit world. I decided to read more, and in my search for suitable material I found there was a considerable amount of literature dealing with the subject. I also read as many books as I could find by those who held the opposite view and considered survival of death and communication with the so-called dead to be a fallacy. However, I found that the writers of these latter books were not careful investigators but mostly voiced personal opinions or criticism of the findings of others. Therefore, I decided to embark on investigations of my own to find out, if possible, which side was right. I went to the Marylebone Spiritualist Association, then in Russell Square, now the Spiritualist Association of Great Britain, 33 Belgrave Square, London, and asked for a sitting with one of their mediums. It was suggested that I should try a clairvoyant medium, a Mrs. Helen Spires. I followed her to a small, sunny room containing two armchairs. As we sat down, she asked if I had ever had a sitting before. When I replied no rather curtly, she looked rather dubious and responded, "Don't expect much, then." In some of the books by the critics I had read that mediums have an ingenious way of questioning or pumping a sitter so as to give information which appears to be communicated by the spirits, whereas, In fact, it is no more than what the sitter has unsuspectingly divulged. I was determined that this should not happen in my case, that there would be no pumping and that I would clamp down like an oyster on any such questions. As a precaution, I had decided to take a notebook and pencil along and write down whatever was said. Soon Mrs. Spiers began to describe a lady whom she declared to see clairvoyantly, saying it was my wife. The description she gave of my wife was correct, but I made no comment. She went on relating, with all the personal characterization and expressions of my wife, details of my daily life, what had happened during the 3 months I had thought my wife was dead. I wrote steadily, asking test questions now and then, which were answered correctly without hesitation. The communicator spoke of how the children were faring, and referred to alterations and events in our home that were known only to me. She spoke of relatives she had left behind and of those she had met on the other side, even one from a remote village in Cambridgeshire. I could not doubt that it was my wife, giving all the evidence of her presence that she knew I wanted. I wrote for an hour, the allotted time, but the medium seemed to be content to act as a go-between and, although my notebook was nearly full, she still went on until at last there was a knock on the door to warn us that the room was wanted for another sitting. Thus the sitting was very satisfactory and gave me much food for thought. The last thing that Mrs. Spiers said as we left the room together was, "Why not try it yourself? You will see your wife as clearly as you see me now." Was I to become a medium? Was I to be a medium myself, at least for a private purpose? Could I eventually see my beloved wife clairvoyantly? Finally, it turned out more strange than that, but her remark was just as true as all the other things this remarkable medium had said. After receiving this advice to try myself to contact the spirit world, I joined the Development Circle. That is a group of people who meet once a week to develop their latent powers of clairvoyance. It is surprising how many people are able to develop this dormant psychic power, and there are quite a number of books which explain the best methods to adopt. A circle conducted by a medium is naturally the better approach. In attending the Development Circle regularly, I convinced myself of its possibilities, as I had occasionally a fleeting experience. Later, between meetings, I began to find that sitting alone at home completely relaxed in my armchair brought still better results. Gradually this led to a wonderful but natural contact with the spirit world that induced an inner happiness and contentment that was priceless to me. I was simply a mourner who was comforted in the fullest sense of the word, as promised by the psalmist of old. During my early efforts to develop clairvoyance, I found that sometimes I could see my spirit helpers after going to bed at night. I would lie perfectly still and at ease until even the results of the bodily activity of going upstairs had subsided and breathing had become quiet and slow. At that time I began to have dreams that were very clear and seemed like actual spirit experiences, and I thought these might have some connection with astral travel. I believe that all earnest seekers have spirit experiences during sleep. All habits of the physical mind are mirrored on the spirit mind. The habit of opening the physical mind and searching for spiritual truth opens the spiritual counterparts. Later I have been shown this in spirit. The spirits call it searching for grains of gold, a very apartment expression. Thus our searching makes the spirit teacher's work much easier. Once when I was sitting in my armchair and striving for snatches of clairvoyance, I seemed to be held in the arms of a great spirit friend. We rose high in the air, so it seemed, and then, suspended in space, he said, "Why do you want clairvoyance? Why do you want direct voice? Why do you want materialization? You will have something much better than all these." Then I was returned to the armchair. It was rather overwhelming, as I could not imagine a companion with such a wealth of love, and wondered what could be better spirit experience than materialization. I was soon to know, because my travels started shortly afterwards. Next headline: leaving the physical body. For several months, it seemed a long time, I strove to develop this extreme passivity after getting into bed until I could keep my consciousness for a time on that knife-edge state between consciousness and sleep after all bodily feeling had gone. Sometimes I seemed to be floating, but I thought this was due to my imagination, as no bodily weight can be felt in this state. Then one night this floating sensation became a reality and I felt myself really rising. Inwardly excited but determined to remain passive so as not to interfere with the experiment, I was pleased to note that I had become highly sensitive and could feel the presence of a calm and friendly spirit helper. The motion, with complete absence of effort on my part, was slow. Then suddenly I began to vibrate violently. After a while this ceased and I continued to move upwards for a short time, then stopped. Thinking that it was about time I abandoned my complete passivity, I looked round and found myself standing behind a table in a room. A line of young men were passing in front of the table and smiling at me. They all appeared to be dressed in blue, and for a moment I thought they were clad in the blue clothing worn in the army hospitals I had been in during the 1914 to 1918 war. Then my sight improved, the blue became a slight mist which surrounded each one, and I saw that they were actually wearing ordinary clothes. They all appeared to be about 23 years of age, and I was amazed at the perfect coloring of their complexions and eyes, which were beautiful by earthly standards. Wondering whether I was experiencing some exceptionally good clairvoyance, I looked round and saw that another young man was standing by my side. He had a happy smile and I could sense the great friendliness of his aura. I realized that this was not clairvoyance and that we were on the same plane in spirit together and, therefore, I must be in my spirit body for the time being. I felt very excited and my mind began working at top speed in the desire to know more. Would they feel solid to me and die to them? How could I find out? It would appear rude to go up to one of these splendid-looking young men and deliberately touch him. Quickly I evolved an ingenious scheme. I would pass behind the young man who stood by my side and, in brushing him, would say "excuse me" in a casual manner. Thus I would be able to touch him apparently by chance. I did this, but when I touched him he at once grasped my hands and burst out laughing. I had to laugh too, as I realized that as our auras mingled, he became aware of all my thoughts and I of his. My lessons about conditions in the spirit world had begun. We are solid to others on the same plane or vibration in spirit, and our thoughts can be read as easily as a book. As we were laughing over this incident, I felt myself beginning to recede from the room. I did not wish to go as I felt very happy, but I sensed that I was being taken back to my physical body and so remained passive. The journey back was calm and gentle. Strangely enough, as I thought, it seemed quite natural. This, I think, was due to the closeness of my spiritual helper. There was a cessation of movement but no feeling of re-entry into my physical body. Then my bodily weight and the light pressure of the bedclothes gradually became apparent. As I stared into the darkness of the bedroom with my thoughts full of this experience, there appeared above me a beautiful solid-looking design of gold filigree work. This stayed for a while and then gradually faded away. The design appeared to cover the whole of the ceiling, and I had the impression that it was a symbol of success, as it appeared after each of my later excursions when they were normal. Sometimes the symbol would be in the form of a bas-relief in white marble with the flowing lines of the Grecian acanthus, and I used to wait and admire these manifestations and wonder if they were produced by the minds of old master craftsmen who had reached perfection of their art in spirit. On the return from a projection, its spiritual influence lingers for a time and the clairvoyant faculty is quite strong, so that psychic structures seem clear even to the physical eyes if the room is dark. After the filigree design had disappeared, I lay in bed agog over the possibilities and even wondered if I would travel again that night. But I soon fell into a normal sleep. This first visit to the spirit world, perhaps owing to its brevity, was the only one during which I have ever attained full consciousness all the time I was out of the physical body, that is from start to finish of the exteriorization or astral projection. Next headline, the second projection. I continued to practice development of a passive condition on going to bed each night, and a few nights later I again felt the gentle rising motion. This time I had no anxiety wondering what was going to happen, I knew and waited in delightful anticipation. There was on this occasion no harsh vibration of my astral body as there had been the first time, and I guessed that my spirit helpers had mastered the technique necessary in my case to get clear of the physical influence. I felt myself continuing to move with increasing speed, but I could not hold my consciousness, and the next thing I became aware of was walking up some white stone steps. On my right there was a little girl of between 9 and 11 years of age, and I had my arm around her with my hand resting on her right shoulder. As I became conscious of my surroundings, I at once wondered where my wife was. Immediately, as if a telephone receiver was against my ear, I heard my wife's voice say, "It is quite all right, Fred. We will meet later." Instantly all feeling of anxiety left me as I realized the truth of what I had once read: there is no real separation in spirit. This was telepathy at its best, simple and natural. I could now concentrate my attention on my present situation. It was a delight to make contact with the child's aura, and I sensed the carefree, happy feelings of a youngster, yet in addition there seemed to be the serenity and maturity of an older person. As we reached the top of the steps, I squeezed her shoulder to see if her body was built upon a bony frame. It was. I was very ignorant of spirits then. Together we entered a hall which I felt was a rest home, where people who had passed over recently, perhaps after physical sufferings, were gaining strength before awakening to full consciousness of spirit life. They were seated around the hall, accompanied by a relation or helper patiently waiting to assist them when they awakened. As we went round the hall, they appeared like people enjoying an afternoon siesta, and some had their eyes slightly open. When we reached the far end of the hall, I stopped before one of the resting arrivals, a stoutish man neatly dressed in a black coat and striped trousers. He opened his eyes slowly and looked at me, and as he did so, a keyboard of an organ began to appear behind him, took solid form and then faded away. This strong thought form, coming from a half-awakened one, surprised me, and I surmised that he had been an organist during his life on Earth and that this was his uppermost interest. Farther along the line of seated people, I noticed a woman whose body seemed to be moving in a strange manner. It looked like an object seen in water and distorted by the refraction of the surface waves. The effect was peculiar, and I sensed a spiritual weakness and hurried past with my little girl companion. But I need not have worried, her mind was quite calm. Halfway round the other side of the hall, we entered an anteroom which was very brightly lit and crowded with helpers. A young man was placed in front of me, and I recognized him as one of my company who had been killed on Gallipoli 22 years before. His face was white and drawn, his eyes tightly closed. I had no idea what I was expected to do, but I think he was brought to me in the hope that he would see me. However, the experiment seemed to be a failure, as he either would not or could not open his eyes. We re-entered the main hall, but shortly afterwards left it and began to descend the flight of white steps. Glancing downwards to make sure of my footing, as is my habit, I noticed that the little girl, who wore a long dress, had bare feet. This discovery caused me to comment in surprise, "Why, you have no shoes." "It does not matter," she replied. "But I must get you some shoes," I insisted. She looked agitated and repeated, "No, it does not matter." I suddenly realized the mistake I had made. By earthly standards the incident was slight, but my insistence had created a clash of thought with this advanced child, a thing to be avoided in spirit, where thought is everything. As we left the place, I gained the impression that my visit was over. I asked the little girl where she lived when on Earth, and she replied, "Ontario, Canada." I wanted this information to discover whether she was connected with my family. A few moments later I saw her little form walking on, and I found myself receding from the scene on my journey back to the body. I retained my consciousness, but my sight was withdrawn, as invariably happens with me, so that I saw nothing on my way back. Nevertheless, I was content to remain passive, finding my spirit helper's presence both calm and comforting. There came the halt and a slight pause as physical feeling seemed to pour into my inert body lying on the bed, followed by a flood of thought concerning my experience. But my spirit observations were not yet over.